This is a special edition of the 16-9 podcast. Special because the format's a little different and because I'm turning this around too quickly to get polished up by the guy who normally sounds engineers these things. So, no music, maybe a bit more background noise. It'll do. I was just in New York the last couple of days attending the National Retail Federation's big trade show. I wanted to pass on some impressions from the show and also run a couple of shorter interviews I managed to grab on the floor. In a minute, I'll start with an interview I did with Ken Goldberg, the CEO of Real Digital Media. He's a well-known industry executive wearing a Stratocast shirt and a Scala badge around his neck. So it was a little bit weird to see Ken in that context. We talked about the news just last week that his company was acquired by Stratocast on the heels of another software rival, Scala, also being acquired by Stratocast last year. After that, you'll hear an interview with Sam Weiss of Unify, a Toronto company that was at NRF showing an interesting product and service that's built off of 20 years of providing print visuals for the retail industry. It now also does digital signage off that same platform. Finally, I'll pass on some thoughts about NRF. First, here's my talk with Ken. All right, so we're at, where are we? We're at NRF. It's been a long day.
Yes.
I'm sitting in the Stratocast booth, strangely, with Ken Goldberg, formerly of Real Digital Media, now, what are you now?
Now I'm of Real Digital Media, a Stratocast company.
Ah.
There you go.
Or what is it, the Stratocast group of companies or something? Or
we're going to go with family.
A family.
Well, yeah.
It's because that's warmer.
Yes, it is.
That was because Chris is kind of the warm family type.
It absolutely is.
So this just happened. How long was it in the making?
Well, I think it's fair to say years.
Yeah.
And, you know, this whole industry is fairly, I don't know if incestuous is the word, but everybody knows
that
everybody
works.
And everybody knows everybody's business one way or another. And so we've had conversations in the past, and, you know, I wrote something recently that said I talked to Chris probably 3 years ago at the investors conference, the Daily Do
Investment. Yeah, I was at that one.
Yeah. And said something nice about him in my pitch, and I pulled him aside afterwards.
So
and said,
if I'd looked closely, I would have seen the fluttering eyelashes.
Yeah, right. I don't know if I was really flirting, but I, you know, we'd kind of been friends offline and traded jokes and stuff, and just talked about stuff. And I said, you know, you're probably the only person I'd be willing to work for.
Yeah.
And we revisited that a couple of times, and you know, sometimes timing and circumstances and opportunity come together. And I think it did, and was working with my board earlier in the year, and we were kind of looking forward towards what we wanted to get done and what the opportunities were, what the risks were.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have a great brand and a good product, but not necessarily all the resources to do everything we wanted to do. And so that puts you at a little bit of risk. And I think that we were at the point where if we didn't get big, we were going to get ignored, really, and ultimately lose. And that really wasn't an option. So we talked through what some of the options were. I said, I think I could probably initiate a conversation with Chris that, you know, if he's interested, it could go quickly because that's how he rolls.
Yeah.
So turns out that he was interested. It might have gone a little quicker if he wasn't in the middle of acquiring Scala at the time. So the conversations went on, and we finally finished all the legalese and shareholder votes, et cetera, in December. And here we are, transitioning in.
So it got finished in December and it got announced this quick.
Yes, yes.
And I was talking to Scala people this morning, and they're all very, very positive about it, and not because they were terrified. If they weren't positive about it, they were just, they said it's been great because things happen quickly.
Yes.
And there was no sort of tension between the different companies going, oh, well, who are you? What do you mean to me? Or anything else. It's just like, okay, we're doing this. Let's go. Yeah. Has it been the same thing for you guys?
So far, very much the same. And I think that it's sort of an open book. And I think Chris has done given a good analogy to people who have said, what are you doing with all these toys?
Yeah.
And he said, you know, my view is really that, view it as a car dealership. Some people want a Prius, some people want a Camry, some people want a Lexus.
Yeah.
You know.
And you're the Lexus, right?
Well, you know, whatever. I'll settle for, you know, a nice Highlander, right?
Yes.
So you can buy whichever car you want, but if you come in for service, we have a long-term relationship.
Right.
And it's very much the same here. So there's places where Scala is going to be a great fit, places where Neocast is going to be a great fit, places where Activia is going to be a great fit. And there's actually a couple of opportunities where we're literally competing against each other on decent-sized opportunities. And, you know, let the customer decide what works for them.
So right now that might seem kind of amusing and all that. How do you manage that down the road when you start looking at accountability and pipelines and all that, and for God's sakes, we're competing with this other company who is owned by our parent company?
Well, that's a great question, and I think eventually, and maybe sooner rather than later, we'll start looking at verticals and niches where we'll have some specialization.
Yeah.
All three of the companies have decent-sized customers in QSR, for instance, and we'll see how that plays out. You know, there's things that our approach is a little different than Scala's, is a little different than the Stratacash's. That's cool, and everybody has different needs. So we may all remain there, and then, you know, our group at RDM may focus on three or four verticals, and the leads that come in for that may funnel to us, et cetera. So I think that'll happen over time. And we have all traditionally had different methods of generating leads and of going after prospects, and I think leveraging those all together is going to create some, hopefully some good efficiencies of all that.
So what would be in, I should be asking Chris Regal this, and I will if he ever slows down enough, but what's in it for them? Like what was Stratacash buying in Real Digital Media? Was it buying accounts? Is it buying a piece of software that they really like? Or, you know, I could make the argument that you're a very stable company and you've had the same people doing the same work for a whole bunch of years, which is always a good story to tell.
Yep. I think all of the above, Dave. I think they understand the platform. They understand our customer base and where we've made some success and inroads. And the team and the people, that stability. And those resources. We're a very lean company, RDM was, and what we get out of it is all the infrastructure that Stratacash has, and that's what now lets us project as a solution provider, not just a software provider.
Right.
And we think that's where the business is.
And how many people are at the company?
A little over a dozen.
So if you were a larger company, say if you had 40 people or something like that, a merger and acquisition by a larger company would probably be terrifying because you're worried about redundancy and everything else. If you're 12 people and, like you say, running lean and mean, there's no fat to trim, right?
Really, there isn't. And, you know, there's probably opportunities in certain areas where we've been afraid, not afraid, but risk averse in terms of investing. We could use more development talent as some of our customers begin to scale even more. The same with support. So that talent is there, and the resources to bring them ahead of the demand curve is a luxury we now have, and we'll take full advantage of.
Potentially a big change for you.
Oh, yeah.
You're in charge. You're the guy now. You're sort of.
Yeah.
What does it mean for you?
And to a certain extent, it means less pressure. And to a certain extent, it means more. And I know that sounds, what's the right word?
Bullshit.
Yeah.
I know. I do know what you mean.
Well, here I am with a Scala badge, a Stratacash cert, and an RDM card. I have multiple personalities. So, but I think...
it is actually pretty funny.
It is.
You would have shown that a year ago. I was like, what happened here?
What? So, a little bit of pressure to produce. I mean, our stated intention is to grow the RDM revenue base by a significant multiple in a short period of time. I think we can do that. We're in the middle of creating that plan. I think we have the opportunity and some of the lead stream to do that, and hopefully the platform to leverage it. So that pressure, hey, look, if all the other pressure is off me, now if we don't meet those goals, then it must be me. So that's the pressure.
And you know, you're based in Sarasota. You do travel to trade shows. You go see clients and all that. But I'm, given the track record of Chris Riegel, CEO of Stratacache, traveling all over the damn place constantly, I assume you're probably going to see a lot more of. I think you're saying by an email, your delta points are going to go up.
No question, and that's good. I think I've always felt that. You know, you remember that old ad, the United Airlines ad, where the boss was handing out the tickets, we're going to go see our customers? Everything gets done face-to-face, and, you know, I want to do a little bit more work customer-facing, a little bit less work in the background and administratively. I think I'm going to have a little freedom to do that, so I'm actually excited. My wife, maybe she's excited, too, to get me out of the house. I don't know. So.
Or not.
Yeah.
In terms of your guys... what was the reaction with them? Like, were they, when did you sort of let them in on this?
We got everyone clued in late summer, September, once we had agreed to kind of a term sheet. Wanted everybody to understand where we were going, that it was going to take time, what it meant opportunity-wise for the company, for everybody else. So phase one was the team. Phase two was key customers, who we started talking to in October. And we actually thought we might get it done by Halloween, but we're settling for shortly before Valentine's Day. Actually, could be this week or next week, who knows, officially.
So, you know, you write a blog now and then. I write a blog a lot.
Yeah.
speculated a lot through the years about industry consolidation. This is a living example of this. From my perspective, there's way too many CMS companies out there. You made maybe not the hard decision, but the wise decision to get in front of this instead of being roadkill. What would be the advice to a lot of the other companies that are similarly sized, maybe a little bigger, a little smaller, that are out there and kind of moving along, because they're not all going to be acquired by Stratacache.
Right. So my advice would be find a niche, find an investor, or find a buyer, or find a new line of work, because it's not sustainable still.
Yeah.
There's too many, and I talked to someone today who said, oh, this customer is going to do their own CMS. And, you know, your eyeballs just did what my eyeballs did, rolled right into the top of your head.
Yeah.
It's not that easy, and there's lots of companies who have lots of millions of dollars learning that the hard way. And there's lots of good companies out there, but for one reason or another, whether they're undercapitalized, didn't do a good job of sales and marketing, or just had bad luck, if you can't turn it around and differentiate yourself, you really need to find a home one way or another. And while we thought we were doing a good job of differentiating ourselves, we thought the time was now to get on the train rather than under it.
Right.
So.
And, well, in theory, you could have got third-party investment or more third-party money in. Grown the company, you know, got fat, maybe not happy, but, right. You know, had 40, 50, 60 bodies.
Right.
But that's a big nut.
No.
That's a chore.
That's a tough process. And the general rule of thumb is, most of the investors at that stage, you know, mezzanine or true venture stage, are really quite risk averse. You know, they're much more willing to take a risk at the startup stage. So with all these companies out here, it's a dime a dozen for them. They're not really interested in throwing $5, $10, $20 million at a company when they could take five and start one up and arguably have more control. And that wasn't really a route that our board was excited about, and it's a long. You cannot predict the outcome when you start dancing with those folks,
yeah.
Right? You could go 6 months down the road and they say, "Yeah, we changed our mind." So there's no one who specializes in that. There's people who dabble in it, it's a different type of boss, right? A different type of board.
Yeah.
And so I've got a boss now, and I like him, and I communicate with him, and I can work with him, and I get the resources that we need to drive this, and we can have grown-up discussions about how to get there. And so, and you know, it was an exit for my angel investors. We've never done a round in 13 years. I've never done an institutional round, I should say, just angel money. And some of those folks had been in for the whole time. And so it was the timing was kind of right for that all around. So here we are.
So a nice big bottle of red got opened.
In fact, it did.
What was it?
I'm trying to remember exactly what it was. A small vineyard out of St. Helena called Anomaly. That I bought a few bottles years ago and have been holding them. I said, this is the one we're doing. So went out to dinner with my wife and drank the Anomaly. It was quite tasty. Cabernet, thank you.
I'm sure. All right, thank you.
All right, Dave, thanks.
I want to thank ScreenFeed for its sponsorship of this podcast. When it comes to packaged content for digital signage networks, the guys at ScreenFeed are best of breed, and it's reflected in the number of networks they serve. Check them out at ScreenFeed.com. Now here's my chat with Sam Weiss of Unify. Sam, tell me about your company.
Our company is Unify, and we recently launched some software called our RMS, which stands for Retail Management Software. And the software is really focused around helping deliver digital content to retailers and making it very easy both for the delivery of the content, but also for the stores themselves to know what's playing and to make sure that the content that's up at a particular time is the correct content that's supposed to be playing.
This isn't a startup, though. This is a company that's been around for a while doing print stuff, so you've kind of grown into this?
Correct, yes. We've been in business actually 20 years, and our business really focused on delivering marketing to stores. About 8 years ago, we started developing this application, and initially it was really focused around print and how do we get regional communications to the stores. And from there, we realized that there's a lot of crossover between print and digital content. So 3 years ago, we started working with Samsung as part of Smart Signage Systems, and from there, we realized that, you know what, we can take the platform that we're using for print and use it very similarly as we're going to deliver our digital content. So each screen has a location within the store or a restaurant. On top of that, we would also be able to identify its size or orientation, and very similar to print. And within the management tool, we can base an allocation that we want to deliver content to our lease line or to a particular spot within the restaurant or the store, and our system will deliver that content with the schedule and it'll be able to play.
So the idea here is that you don't necessarily need a full digital signage CMS in a lot of cases, particularly in retail, because they're digital posters, right?
They're digital posters, and it's really trying to simplify it, make it easy, but also make it affordable. I mean, you know, digital content is the way, and digital signage is the way that things are going to go, and we really need to look at how can we make this affordable for retailers, how can we offer flexibility, and more importantly, how do we also make sure we get compliance? So one of the big aspects was the ask on our end was, how does a store know that the sign that's delivered or the content that's playing is the correct sign? And with our tool, the store can actually log in, click on that particular fixture in that zone, and they're actually able to see the content that's playing. Just to use a quick example, with McDonald's, when they started switching all their menu boards to digital, even though we're not delivering the content, they use our tool to be able to verify, because the stores could know what menu they're putting up. At lunchtime, they have the lunch menu. At snack time, they have a snack menu. At dinner time, they'll put up the dinner menu. But when they switched to digital, they had no way of cross-referencing the content that was being delivered in terms of the screen, whether that was correct or not. So our tool is very much used for that, to verify the content that's playing, to make sure that's correct.
Do you think what you have is a digital signage platform, or is it a retail compliance platform or merchandising platform that also does digital signage?
I would say it's a combination of both, mm-hmm. but primarily our focus is on now delivering the content. So traditionally, to break into the market, we really worked as a compliance tool. So you know what? You've invested in an existing system. We know there's a lot of money in that infrastructure. Let us help you on the compliance side. What we're seeing now with most of our clients, as they're now looking for their next generation in terms of digital content management for their signage programs, they're looking at our tool because it is very efficient. There's no extra licensing fees to start adding displays, and it's simply dropping in a screen, connecting it to the Wi-Fi network, identifying that IP address, and they're ready to go within our system.
And it works on system-on-chip displays?
Yes, it does. Correct.
Yep. Any, or do you just work with Samsung?
Samsung and both, also the LG systems.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Would you add other kinds of devices? Like, would you go on PCs? Could you go on PCs?
Absolutely, yes. We go on PCs, and we have done some piloting on PCs. One of the biggest areas that we've done the piloting is on different interactive displays for clients, and that's worked quite well. And also, we've done some piloting on pushing to tablets and mobile devices. So non-Apple, but anybody else we can, like Android.
So you could do interactive displays.
Oh, absolutely. And we do.
And how does that work? Because I think you were talking about being videos and JPEGs and so on.
Yeah.
This is more elaborate when you start to get into interactive.
Yes. And the simplest way that we do interactive is that our solution is essentially the screen saver. So when the system is not being interacted with, the content that's playing is being pulled directly from our system. As soon as somebody touches the system, then what it will do is it'll switch it actually now to a web browser. And from there, the interactivity can be set up. And so our team will help set up that up so it's completely smooth and completely seamless. And more importantly is the statistics in the back-end side. We can track who's touching, what they're touching, where they're going through the navigation. So one of the things that we just did a pilot with was getting users' MAC addresses when they're in a Telus store and be able to track who's standing there, what they've looked for, and be able to associate that with a particular fixture on our floor plan system.
So this is actually pretty sophisticated. This is not just a print and compliance management system that, oh, by the way, we got some digital screens to work too.
No. We spent a lot of time really trying to understand what retailers need. And one of the big things we saw, there was a big void in terms of how headquarters saw the operations versus what the store saw happening. And there was a disconnect in the sense that stuff was just shoved down to the stores with very little feedback. And what we've really spent a lot of time is, how do we empower the stores and also headquarters to really understand what's happening in each particular environment, and also being able to pull in different systems. So again, looking at traffic flow. We can take traffic flow from third-party systems, overlay it on our floor plan, and you can actually see where your digital signage displays are, print displays are on that particular floor plan, which will help determine, is that fixture in the right spot? Should we move that display to a different location? To definitely kind of help drive and get better engagement from customers as they go through your stores.
Who are you working with?
I work with a variety of companies. So I work with a couple companies in the U.S. that we can't talk on NDAs, but within Canada, we've worked with McDonald's, Telus, Bell, Rogers from the telecommunications side, Adidas, we're doing some work with at this point. And in the last year and a half, we've been doing a lot more work in the U.S. And it's interesting because our success in the U.S. hasn't really been as much on the telecommunications side, but more so on the restaurants, so the restaurant service side. And here we're looking at doing implementations of roughly about 10,000 locations. So it's substantial in terms of size, but one of the things that always surprises me, whether a company has 100 stores or 10,000 stores, is most of the management that they do the way they manage the stores is through Excel. And people often ask, what's our biggest competitor? And we'll often say that it's Excel, other than other things that they might be using in operations, just because a lot of companies get so tied into trying to manage how they're going to distribute and what messaging they're going to do through these systems. And we really try to take it away from that to say, you have to do it in a bit smarter way. You really have to try and get other information to tie it into the process.
Is it open platform, like third-party developers could work with it?
Absolutely, yep. And we very much encourage that. We have a couple of APIs that we've developed for different applications. So, yes. And also, we have a lot of third parties that use the system through our clients. So, for example, we have companies like R.R. Donnelley and Transcontinental that are in the system every day because they manage large portions of the business for Rogers and Bell. Same with most of their agencies. Go in there and log in. So any digital content that an agency develops is actually uploaded directly by the agency through the system itself. So it really, again, eliminates a lot of this kind of back and forth, and everything is centralized through a single hub.
So you've had the advantage of being around for 20 years, had some big-ass clients. So in order to get this side, the digital side of the business going, it would be a lot easier than it would have been for a startup.
It definitely a lot easier. And I think that this transition has been slower than what we anticipated because we didn't factor in the amount of investments that a lot of our clients had done over the last, say, 10 years in the existing systems that they have. So as now these systems now are just slowly starting to look at, okay, how do we refresh it? What's the next thing looking like? That's where I think a solution like ours is going to start to make sense. Because, again, the infrastructure that's required is a lot less. But we really look at the people that are responsible to deliver that content to the stores, and we worked with them for a long time to see how do we make it easier for you,
right,
and then how do we make it easier for the stores if there's an issue. So if a screen goes black, our system will automatically pick up on that, notify the store. Doesn't get a response from the store, can notify somebody at head office. Likewise, too, if a store has an issue with a screen, they don't have to pick up the phone and call somebody. They go right into our system. They actually click physically on the screen within our system, report an issue, and that gets routed to the right party to resolve.
So for a retailer, it's one less system they have to use in terms of a CMS,
right.
One less invoice.
Yeah.
And if they're just getting into this, it's one vendor versus two that they have to
right.
use.
And even if the third-party vendors, for example, with Bell Canada, they have the vendor that manages all the displays within our system. So if I'm a store, I report an issue, that email actually goes both to Bell and to this vendor, and this vendor knows which display, the manufacturing, all the information that's required for them to make the call, and they can respond to the call, they can manage the ticket, and they can close the ticket with the store. So, you know, if you think about that huge operations that we've completely removed from this task of managing these screens, it's now made it very easy for them to do. Bell's totally aware of it because they can see all the logs that are happening, plus they can see when it's being resolved. And again, this is just a lot of feedback that we got from the industry where they said, you know, this is a challenge in terms of managing a lot of this stuff.
How large is the company?
Company is based in Toronto. We got 10 employees. And then in terms of deployment, we have roughly right now about 11 active accounts that are using the tool. We're hoping...
Using both the digital and the print side?
About 50% of that are using the digital, and the balance are all print. So let's say about 5 customers are using the digital. We're hoping by the end of 2017, early 2018, that we should be able to double that. On the digital side, based on what our conversations that we've had, we're looking at almost lining that up with our print. We really see a big expansion in that.
So you got some pretty big-ass clients for a little company.
We have, yeah. And we've been very fortunate. And it's a lot of it is just, and we've also, you know, some of our competitors that exist within this field in a variety of different categories, we've been very fortunate. I mean, we're extremely flexible, but one of the big things is that, you know, we're always looking at the whole picture as a whole, as opposed to a single solution. And I really do think this is our competitive advantage. Even some of the big companies that focus on digital signage solely is that, you know, they limit themselves because there's a lot more to digital signage than just delivering content to a screen. You know, we may not do content delivery or content design for it, but, you know, that we feel there's a lot of agencies out there now that can help with that aspect.
Right. And as we talked about, in a lot of cases, this is all they're ever going to really need or do.
Exactly. Right. So it's definitely true. Yep.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you.
NRF is not a digital signage show. There are lots of signage vendors at the show with booths or just walking around. It's a retail tech show full of stuff that will be largely unfamiliar if you live and work in the digital signage bubble. But it's a valuable show to walk if retail is your vertical and you want to understand what technologies are in play or just emerging. I'd say the biggest theme for the show, that I saw at least, was about analytics. I saw dozens and dozens of companies showing some sort of solution that existed to use sensors and mine data to develop a real sense of what's happening in a store, both in trending and in real time. There were lots of companies using video analytics, most of it just face pattern detection. But I spoke with a couple of companies that are doing facial recognition based on loyalty programs. So if you opt in on that loyalty program, they're logging your face and putting it into a database. That means when you go to that retailer store, the system is not just counting and logging and maybe messaging a general profile, it's counting and logging and pitching you. I can imagine how there may be some privacy issues around that. We'll see. I saw startups that had analytics systems, all the way up to this freaky lab experiment Google was showing that used a type of radar for real-time analytics. Never heard of LiDAR, but it was really interesting to see. NEC has had camera-based analytics coming out of Japan for several years now. But what I saw at the company's NRF booth was a suite of capabilities that would stand on their own as a third-party business. I've not seen that with other display guys, and certainly not with CMS companies. This stuff all matters in the context of digital signage because data can not only trigger more relevant content, but also inform how people are responding to content in terms of viewing times and where displays make the most sense. I was impressed and a bit surprised by the way Samsung pulled together a customer journey demo in its booth. It pretty seamlessly tied together screens, interactive and mobile. Now, you'd think cross-platform stuff would be second nature to a company like Samsung, but in companies that are that big, phones and displays can and have been silos. So what I mean is the phone guys don't really talk to the display guys. They're in another building. They do their thing. But in this case, they pulled it together. It was pretty seamless. And it's something I'd assume is going to show up in more trade shows like ISE and DSE, because it kind of shows how this largely elusive idea until now of how phones and big screens work together. Now, is NRF a show the supplier should be at? Well, maybe. It's a big, big show. It runs over several floors, and I was there a day and a half, and I never saw everything. So a little booth can pretty easily get lost. I think if you're going to be there, you need to be in a state that you have a lot of good prospects that are coming to see you, and this is an efficient way to get those meetings, as opposed to just getting a booth, hanging a banner, and hoping people stop and have a look. On the other hand, if retail digital signage is your thing, this is about as target-rich an environment as you can imagine, so you'd somehow or other figure a way to get there. That's it for this special episode. I'll go back to more polished efforts next week. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.